The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I'm on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. This podcast shares the military transition hot washes and after-action reports of your fellow veterans to smooth your own path out of the military. On today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, I am welcoming Travis Pierce. Travis separated from the Army in 2009 with very little notice and not much of a plan. He got off a flight without much more than his cell phone and a duffel bag, but he did have his training from the Army, where he started as EOD and was reclassed as a wheeled vehicle mechanic. He joined the Army to go to college and had always wanted to be an engineer, so he started school and landed a job at the Tampa Airport as a monorail mechanic. Today, he is working as an engineer with that same company, Alstom, and he's here to share his transition story with us. So welcome, Travis. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura. It's good to be here.
So I kind of just glossed over your transition story, right? I just kind of quickly touched on it, but I know it was much more challenging and complex than I mentioned. I know you had a very short notice. So let's talk about it. Tell me about your transition from the Army.
So the physical move was really quick, but the last minute notice was I had just returned from a joint special operations in the Pacific. So I had returned to my unit because I was part of a small task force that detached to go help out in the Pacific. So when I returned to my unit, they were already prepping for another deployment to Iraq. And that's when I found out I was in the middle of the process of being stop lost. Instead of me getting out of the Army, they were going to send me back. So fortunately, I had a commander that was understanding, and he gave me a choice whether I could redeploy with the unit or I could ETS and take my honorable discharge and try my hand finding a career in the civilian sector. But unfortunately, it was at the height of the Great Recession.
I remember that one.
So I had to make a choice. Did I want that enter the civilian workforce and go to school in the middle of the recession? It wasn't easy at all. So since I had chosen to ETS and take the honorable discharge, I didn't have the luxury of having the month's preparation time that typically takes soldiers to exit the military. So I had to rush everything. So I had to go through all the, turning in all your equipment, getting all the paperwork done and all that stuff, and clearing medical and everything before you get out. So I didn't have the time to prep for finding a good landing spot. You know, where am I going to work? Where am I going to stay? I just didn't want to redeploy, and I've had enough of combat. I don't want to go anymore, I wanted to go to college. That was the main reason why I enlisted in the Army was for the GI Bill. So I can go to college. So because of that last minute ETS, I was stationed in Hawaii at the time. So all of my belongings were put on a ship and sent to California, where they then take it off the boat, they put it on trucks, and then send it to Tampa Bay, Florida, which is where I was from. And that takes a while. So the last minute ETS plus packing up all my belongings, I ended up at the airport at Tampa International Airport with my duffel bag as my checked item and my cell phone, trying to figure out, okay, well, where do I stay now? Maybe I can stay with my brother. Maybe I can stay with my sister. you know, and that's what I had to start off with. It wasn't easy.
It was going to say, not like back in 2009, there was a really organized transition assistance program either. That really didn't start and for a few years, right?
Yeah, yeah. And even if they had something in place, a lot of soldiers that were, you know, coming back from deployments close to their ETS date, that's what you'd find they'd run into. Sometimes they just don't have the amount of prep time, you know, for that safe landing.
Okay. So you flew into Tampa, you know, I know you enrolled in college, got all that stuff going, but how'd you land that first position? I think if I remember correctly, your first job at Alstom was as a monorail mechanic. I think the Army has monorails. So tell us about how'd you land that role? How'd you translate your military skills? Like, you know, I know you started as EOD and then you went to wheeled vehicle mechanic. Like, how did you do all that?
Yeah, well, I would say that, you know, being a mechanic in the Army really is what earned me the skills to get that position. But at the end of the day, really that wasn't it. Having the mechanic skills did help, but I learned that when I was in the Army. So really it's the ability to learn new things. And there's no school of monorail. There's no school of what we like to call or APMs, automated people movers. So they're the monorails plus the trams that you see at a lot of the airports. There's no school you go to work on those things mechanically and electrically. So what we look for is people's ability to learn. Can you pick things up and learn something new? Can you adapt to change? Can you overcome obstacles? How do you work under pressure? How do you work as a team? And all that stuff I already had from when I was in the service. And I learned a lot of that. Now having the mechanical skill set to back that up did help a little, but that really wasn't the main focus, because being a mechanic on Army vehicles is not the same as being a mechanic on monorail vehicles. So really, it's the ability to learn and the ability to adapt.
You work for Alstom. Did they have any programs in place, like any kind of, like, you know, to smooth that process for you? Was there anything that they did to make that process easier for you to get into the organization?
Well, onboarding was pretty easy. Where I started working at the time was Tampa International Airport as a monorail technician, and explained to them whenever I was interviewed what really my long-term goals were. That I wanted to be an engineer. I wanted to go to school. So I needed to work. I'd love to work for the company. But at the same time, I would also like to go to school. And that was something that we had talked about with onboarding with the company in Tampa. Is okay, you know, we can bring you on, you can start working as a technician, and, you know, you can go to school, and as you learn things, if there's a way we can apply it to what you're doing here, then great, that's what we'll do. And it just went that route. A lot of the stuff that I learned in the military, I was able to bring to the company when I was in Tampa, and it actually helped, because some of the procedures that I picked up, we started doing there. In Tampa, procedures I picked up in the Army, we started doing there in Tampa, and vice versa. A lot of the stuff that they were doing really supplemented what I had already learned.
You, a lot of what you mentioned that you felt was marketable for you were soft skills, right? Teamwork, ability to learn things. I mean, those aren't necessarily soft skills, but they're not like something you can document necessarily. Like, yeah. How did you demonstrate those on your resume and your interview? What are some things that you did to really call out and highlight those skills?
So for my resume, really what it ended up boiling down to is what my accomplishments were, what my achievements were. And a lot of that was, like for my resume, I had annotated the type of equipment that we worked on. You know, we were working on Humvees and LMTVs and PLSs, generators. We had ROPUs, which are the reverse osmosis water purifiers. We had so many different types of equipment that there's no way that, you know, you can just take somebody that's a mechanic, throw them on one piece of equipment, and they're going to know all of that. You have to learn. You know, you need the ability to learn things quickly. And when I put that in my resume, that I had worked on so many different types of equipment and listed some of the values on there that we're looking at, like, we're responsible for maintaining millions of dollars worth of equipment. And it's something to really think about. And that was one of the things that they had looked at after speaking with the manager, you know, a couple of years later, I was talking with them. And really that's what set the deal was the fact that you see that you worked on so many different things, you've done so many different things. That's what they're looking for. You know, and it, as far as medals and achievements go, you know, some of the stuff that you go in there, and there could be like a good conduct medal, or if you have an achievement medal or an ARCOM, you know, what's the reason behind that? Because sometimes they want to look not just what your technical skills are, but are you a good fit for the workplace? You know, are you gonna play well with others?
Okay, all right. And I think that people often discount those skills, but it sounds like they were really the key to get you in the door, right?
They were.
Well, and are you in a place now where you're hiring people and screening candidates, or is that not something you're doing?
Well, I'm no longer in Tampa. I took a position in Pittsburgh. So I don't have any direct reports of my own, but the company is always looking for all kinds of people. And we're not just based out of Tampa and Pittsburgh. We have sites all over the world, all over the United States. So we have a lot of airports where we have some of our products there. We maintain a lot of the monorail systems that you'll see, or if you fly out somewhere, chances are you've ridden on one of our trams, one of our people movers at Tampa and Orlando and downtown Miami. You know, so we're always hiring for people to work on these things. So we need mechanics, we need guys that know electrical, electronics. Managers, maintenance managers, and you know that's just on the field side. Some of our field sites. Then we have our corporate side, which is what I'm a part of, where we have, you know, our corporate engineering and project managers and stuff like that. So there's so many different types of positions within Alstom, and it'd be hard to not find skill sets that you take from the military service that aren't applicable somewhere within Alstom.
Does Alstom have like a dedicated veteran hiring program?
That I'm not sure about.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and just give us the company website, if you don't mind, and then we can put it in the show notes so people can check out the opportunities and the programs that you do have.
Yeah, with alstom.com.
Yes. And it's alstom.com, right?
Yep.
Alstom. Okay. So I did check it out. And if you're interested in exploring careers at Alstom, you can go to www.alstom.com, and that's A-L-S-T-O-M. So www.alstom.com/careers/join-Alstom. And that's the link where you can learn more about opportunities with this great organization. Excellent. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Anything we can do to showcase new opportunities for veterans was I'm guessing that I've ridden on the one in the Orlando airport. I had no idea who worked on that. So, you know, I think it's a great thing. I want to open up people's eyes to new opportunities. That's one of the things that I really want to do in this season is showcase companies that veterans don't even know exist and aren't aware of. And I appreciate you talking about the opportunities that you have there at Alstom. So thank you for that. So, you've in hindsight, right? You've already been through the transition. It, you know, 14 years you've been in the private sector. Like as you look back, you know, we always say hindsight's 20/20, right? But what would you have changed or done differently to ensure that your transition was more of a smooth process?
If I could do that, that'd be great. That'd be really great. So, the one of the biggest struggles that I had when I got out and became a civilian was my goals were all over the map. I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted. I know I wanted to go to college to be an engineer. I didn't know which college. I didn't know what type of engineer I wanted to be. I didn't know timelines of anything. So I never clearly defined my goals. And that's probably the biggest piece of advice I can give anybody, whether you're active duty or whether you're a veteran, have clearly defined goals that are attainable. You know, I can say I want to go live on Mars in 5 years. It's not attainable. You know, goals you can actually obtain and then list out what you have to do to achieve those goals and then work on them that way. So you always have something to fall back on. So no matter how bad things get, you just focus on, okay, the mission is to complete these X amount of tasks in order to achieve that goal. And then that's what you do. That's what helps keep you on track. You know, even when things aren't going your way, things are going south, at least it gives you something to focus on and something to work towards. And anytime you make one of those milestones that gets you closer to your goal, you got to be able to celebrate it.
I just like to point out that Travis, not me, is the first one to say focus in this episode. It's kind of a running joke that my favorite word to say in every single episode is focus, because I agree with you. Like, I think you have to have a focus. You have to have a goal. You have to know the direction you're going. Like you said, so that if you do get kind of mired down or lost, you know the direction you need to take. And so thank you for, I didn't even pay him to say the word focus. I just want all my listeners to know that that was not prompted by me. I was waiting for it to come out, but so I kind of joke that we have like a water drinking game of at what point is Lori going to say the word focus and we all have to drink a shot of water so we can stay hydrated, right? So there you go. Now, I think that's great advice. And, having that step-by-step process has probably helped you progress through your career, right? So you stayed with the same organization for the last, 14 years almost, right? And so, we always talk about the veteran statistics of high turnover rates and, that leaving that first job, I think depending on where you look, the statistics are anywhere from 60 to 80% of veterans leave their first job within the first 6 months. And that number is even higher when you get to the year mark. So what do you think has led to you staying with that organization and not being one of those statistics?
So the biggest thing is easily stability. That's probably one of the biggest concerns. Anybody leaving the military or veterans currently is you want to have some place that's stable where you know that everything is going to be okay. You show up, you work hard, you take care of the organization, they take care of you, you have good benefits, you don't have to worry about anything really bad happening. So the stability is huge. And on top of that, you're in a work environment where everything's teamwork oriented, everything's mission oriented. A lot of the values, we have our Alston values, and a lot of our values are very similar to the same values that you see when you're in service. The Army has a loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage. And, a lot of that stuff draws parallels with the same values that we have in Alston. So it's an easy switchover. And, that the work is really similar as far as, how we work safely, the same thing with the military. They're very big on safety, policies and procedures for everything. So it's not like you have to just kind of, you're on your own, you got to figure it out. Everything's very structured and everybody has each other's back. So that teamwork, that camaraderie, it really goes a long way. So that was probably the biggest thing for me is once I started working here, I just changed from camos to an Alston shirt, and that was it.
I think it's important to find a good environment where you feel comfortable, where you feel like you fit, right? That sounds like that was a big key for you and staying in the same place. So okay,
yeah, and there's quite a few veterans within our organization too. So that was another nice little bonus right there. Is you're among friends, you're among battle buddies. Across all branches of service, but we all get to know each other really well and share our own little stories and stuff, and so it makes it kind of fun too.
By the way, I love that like more than 15 years after you learned it, you still like popped off those Army Corps values with like nobody's business. So they're ingrained in that brain deep, right?
Yep.
You've progressed through your career at Alston. You started as a mechanic, you're now an engineer. Like, take me through that process of what do you feel like was the key to you progressing? What are some of the things that you did to help move your career forward?
Well, the biggest thing, the only goal that I had when I first started was I want to be an engineer. But when I started working in Tampa, the site manager at the time, and again, this was, over 10 years ago, the site manager has since moved on, but the site manager at the time sat down with me because I was going to school at the time, and he was, vested in my future. And he had even asked me, he's like, look, I know you want to get your engineering degree, but we may or may not have an engineering position here in Tampa when you graduate. And I just want you to know that we support you and we want to help you whether or not you even stay with the organization. So that right there, and I remember this conversation like it was yesterday, that was a very pivotal conversation in my career, because at that point I realized that I'm working with other people that actually care about me. They care about my career and they care about my family, because let's face it, we all come to work every day because we have families to support. I have a wife and kids at home, and I want to make sure that they're happy and have a good quality of life. And he was genuinely invested in that, and that was I was touched. So I let him know that, yeah, absolutely, I want to be an engineer. I would love to stay with the organization if we can make it happen. And they were very flexible with me. So they worked with me. And I was, at the time, I was an hourly employee. So I would go to school full time and I would also work full time. And it was really tough because, you know, my wife and I got married and then we had our first child. And so we had a baby plus full time school plus full time work. So the manager gave me a little bit of flexibility. So I can work on school items and you know, be able to spend time with my family and stuff like that. So it really helped out to get me through college with the amount of flexibility I was given early on in my career. And I was so fortunate that close to the time I graduated, an engineering position opened up in Tampa. So I had to go through the whole application process for it. It was not a shoo-in. So I had to go through the whole application process for it within Alston. And they loved it. And they hired me as the engineer there. So I went from being a technician, you know, kicking tires on monorail cars and people movers to now I'm the site engineer. So then I spent years working as a site engineer and working on projects there. And I got good at what I was doing and I loved it and I wanted more of it. So you fast forward a few years, I was offered a position to relocate from Tampa to our Alstom corporate engineering office in Pittsburgh for a different position where I help out all of the APM sites in North America instead of just one. So, and that I absolutely love doing what I do. So that was a no-brainer for me.
That's great. And I think so it's your company's flexibility, but also yours as well. So you had to be willing to relocate, to pursue additional education. So it is a give and take. You know, they were very flexible and adaptable with you in the beginning, and you had to do the same to progress forward, right?
Yep. Yeah. And that's a great relationship to have, especially with your employer, you know. I work hard for the company and I take care of them and the same you know respect they take care of me. So that's why staying with the company is a really good thing. The stability is always there and you know you're always going to be able to reap the rewards of what you do. And that there's no way I'd be in the position I am now with, you know, being able to go through college, buy a home, start a family with my wife, if I were bouncing around. You know, so I'm sincerely hoping that this podcast helps bring veterans, you know, to the organization because I love nothing more than be able to help out other veterans or other service members. And I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that this would be a great move for them.
Yeah. I love it. So, and I think that one of the things you did really well also that I would recommend to everybody is that you've got to communicate your future goals internally. You know, I remember in another career, many years ago, anybody that I was in retail management, I was in an individual store and I got promoted to the corporate office. And everyone's like, how did you do it? I'm like, I did my job as good as I could. And I told every single person I ever met that I had future goals. I wanted to move forward in the organization. And I think that having that conversation, not to say to your boss, like, hey, I'm not happy with what I'm doing now, but just to say, like, I really like this company and I want to progress internally. And these are some of the things that I want to do. There's nothing wrong with communicating those goals to people so that when those opportunities come up, your name is in the forefront of their mind as someone who is a candidate.
Yep.
Do you feel like that helped you as well? Just being open and honest?
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds like from the beginning, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why that was one of the most pivotal conversations I had in my career, because that was a learning lesson for me that being open about your aspirations really does help, you know, cause that really set the foundation for where I am now is being open, explaining to people what you would like to do, where you would like to be, and what can I do to achieve that? And that goes back to knowing what your goals are and then how can I achieve that goal and listing those things out. And if you work towards those, then it's achievable. You can achieve your goal. Now, if you communicate that with whoever your manager is or whoever you're working with, a lot of times they can help you achieve that or at least put you on the path where if you work hard enough, you know, your path will meet that goal. So it's
right.
Absolutely crucial. And then on top of that, another thing that I learned from that is that you develop a level of trust once you start opening up to people about where you want to be in the organization.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, that it's that level of trust. And it's also, you know, sometimes, Alstom is a huge employer. They have literally global locations and it would be easy to get lost.
Yeah.
Right? In such a large organization. And I think that that's sometimes people struggle with that. Like, how do I stand out from the crowd. And I think that building that trust, building those relationships, making sure people know your future aspirations, those are all keys to continuing to progress forward in that private sector role. Any kind of last lessons learned as we kind of wrap up today? Anything you want to share? Maybe something that you've struggled with in your post-military career that, you know, advice you would like to give to people listening today?
One of the things, again, if I could go back in a time machine and change a few things, learn what all your VA benefits are. You know, completely off subject with employers and stuff, but learn what your VA benefits are, learn what you qualify for. Do the best you can to gather as much information about your GI Bill if you plan to use it, any sort of VA healthcare. And there's a lot of veteran organizations outside of the military that aren't VA affiliated, that have resources that are available to you. So if you have any concerns or a little nervous about stuff, 9 times out of 10, there's a resource out there where there's a lot of veterans that are in the same boat or service members in the same boat that they're all working together to, you know, to help each other out in the long run. And that's something that I wish I would have found sooner.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's great advice. If you haven't yet listened to it, we did an episode with Dr. Paul Lawrence, who has written a book about veteran benefits, and he was the former Undersecretary of Veteran Benefits, appointed by President Trump. And he has a great talk on just some of the most uncommon or the most commonly overlooked benefits. And his book is very comprehensive. I would highly recommend you check that out so you can take advantage of those, because, you know, I think a lot of people are hesitant. We talk about this a lot. It's like, well, I'm not that hurt, or I'm not that injured, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, but that might be today, but what about in 20, 30 years? And so,
yeah,
you know, you definitely should pursue all of those different options.
And that's some of the stuff I'm saying now. You know, I remember, you know, small little finger fractures and stuff like that weren't a big deal then. Now they wake me up in the morning.
Yeah. Now I can't bend my finger the correct way. Where do I understand that? You know, like sometimes getting old has its benefits and sometimes it doesn't. So, well, Travis, I really appreciate you sharing your story and talking to us about your organization as well. Just giving us an opportunity to learn a little bit more about your organization and what you do and the opportunities that are out there. I appreciate you sharing that, all of your experience with us.
Thank you, Laura. And I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and join our YouTube channel so you don't miss any lessons that we share.